What is this place?
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this podcast. You just watched What Is This Place? Episode 1. And this is a podcast where I'll talk with the director, writer, cameraman, cinematographer, grip, best boy, whatever that is. The man behind it all, every bit of it, literally a one-man band, Federico, Fred Ferro. Fred, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah.
But just to be clear, I did all those things, but I did have help from two of my cousins.
Okay.
They worked cameras while they were down
there. Well, thank you, cousins.
I did have some help.
Thank you, cousins.
And, people that just let me in and gave me access.
Right. Okay. So, the name of the documentary is What Is This Place? But I figured that you and I would test a couple names for this podcast. So, I have a couple of ideas. I would like to know what you think.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that, but all okay.
right. Okay. The first name. One guy who knows football, and the other who knows very little and yet believes the United States should be better than they are because we have a talent pool of over 300 million people. What the fuck is going on?
Podcast. So what is this place? Colon. All that podcast.
All that.
I like that.
Okay. Here's the second one. Football expert and a guy who likes soccer but doesn't like parking the bus and believes that it should be banned from the sport. Because Hope Solo is right, it's cowardly. And any manager, should have some self-respect and never play that way again. What do you feel of the second one?
Well, let's just say that it's a necessary evil for some teams to park the bus and park a double-decker.
So you're not a fan of the second name?
No, I can work with it, but I don't like the idea of banning parking the bus.
Well, I like these two different titles because I think they're very succinct.
Yeah. Sure.
To the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's we can consider that. But for now, we'll go with What Is This Place? The podcast, I suppose. Okay. But we'll work. We're going to test out different things. So talk to me about, first of all, the non-existent shoestring budget. That when we say shoestring, that's generous. But you pretty much had very little. But you put together this wonderful introduction to second league Argentine football.
Right.
So talk to me about the process of just getting this on tape and into YouTube for that 12-minute first video. Kind of shed some light on the undertaking that you had to go through just to get this filmed and maybe the access and all that.
So the idea for the show came about in November of 2022. I went down to Argentina during the World Cup. My family, some family members and I went down there and we
just so you know, this podcast is equally low budget. We are literally sitting over an iPhone doing this and we're in Fred's kitchen. We escaped the leaf blowers of the landscapers, but now we have some asshole laying on his horn. So yeah, we apologize.
There'll be some dog barking. There'll be some people and, yelling maybe.
Right. And if you hear what sounds like somebody throwing Tic Tacs on a floor, that's Raleigh the dog.
Yeah, my dog.
Yeah, on the hardwood floor. So we are coming to you with
technological
advancement and the state-of-the-art equipment here. So go ahead, please. You were saying the World Cup in Argentina.
So 2022, I go down there with some family members. It's a glorious time. Argentina's playing.
Wait, Argentina won the World Cup?
Argentina won the World Cup.
I hadn't heard.
In case anybody missed it, Argentina did win the World Cup in 2022. And we are still currently the world champs. Anyway, so I went down there and we watched a few games. We came back. And then I went back down in February. I just started inquiring about these stadiums and these neighborhoods. I've always been interested in old stadiums and their history, especially in Buenos Aires, where every neighborhood has a club. And it's these clubs where these kids go, not only do they learn how to play soccer, but they learn how to play volleyball, handball, they learn how to swim, they go there for summer camps. It's the fabric.
And the respective clubs sponsor all these programs?
Right.
Okay.
So they go there and they grow up in these clubs. A lot, you know, they're not all huge clubs like Boca Juniors or River Plate. They're smaller clubs, and a lot of them are second division, third division, but they have a huge, like a very fervent, passionate following because these kids grow up in these clubs, and it's all they know. So it's their family and these clubs, and they grow up going to the stadium. And right in the middle of a neighborhood, you just see a stadium, 20,000 person stadium, 30,000, 10,000, and they're just right in the middle of the neighborhood. And
so it's a rite of passage for
pretty much. I mean, they get together on Saturdays or Sundays. They eat, they drink, they play the music, they go to the stadium together, caravan style. Mm-hmm. And to them, these clubs are like the clubs are like the heartbeat of the neighborhood. So I just was interested in a lot of these stadiums are old, you know, they're 50, 60, sometimes 100 years old, and they all have their own story to tell. So my interest was just to, I just had an idea, especially since work was slow, the TV industry kind of like went on strike, there was a couple strikes going on, and work wasn't rebounding as quickly as everybody had hoped in the industry. I was like, all right, let me try to do something on my own. And I flew down to Argentina and I...
Sold your car, went down to Argentina.
Sold my car.
You went all in.
Went all in. I mean, I was kind of like home, figuring out, trying what to do. And I was like, you know what? I sold my car and I went down. And I had a few clubs in mind that I wanted to go to. I wanted to do mostly smaller clubs. I wanted to film smaller
clubs. For access or just because you felt like there was a better story to tell?
Right. I started,
A little both?
While I was down there, I started talking to people. I started talking to some cousins, some family members, some friends. And they started giving me numbers and connects and contacts. And I started calling around. And they're like, yeah, come on down. Everybody's pretty friendly. You know, they're pretty open to giving you access. I mean, these are, you know, they're professional clubs. It's like if the New York Giants or New York Mets said, all right, come on down and just walk around the stadium and come and film. And they give you a wristband and just come and give you full access. It wouldn't happen here. So while I'm down there, I noticing that these clubs are so important to these neighborhoods, I just wanted to capture basically the passion of the fans. I wanted to capture the neighborhood. The neighborhoods are full of these murals of players or people important to the club and all these sayings. There's paintings and graffiti and murals all around the stadiums in the neighborhood. I wanted to capture what the stadiums meant, what the neighborhood meant, what these things mean to the fans, what the neighborhoods mean to the fans, and what the fans mean to the club. So I went down there and I got a hold of four clubs. Three second division clubs and one first division club. My idea was just do mostly smaller clubs, but I had a...
You can't pass up a top tier
team. Right, I had a first division club, San Lorenzo, and they're not just a first division. They're one of the big clubs. In Argentina, there's five big clubs. There's Boca Juniors and River Plate that most people that know soccer will know those clubs. And then there's Independiente and Racing Club, and those are two bigger clubs in the south of Buenos Aires. And then there's San Lorenzo. San Lorenzo is one of the big five. They have a huge following. My cousin's boyfriend had a connection, and I just made a phone call, and they're like, yeah, come on down, and you can come here and film and do whatever you got to do. Yeah. So those were the four clubs that I filmed while I was down there. And there was a little smaller club called Eros, E-R-O-S. And it's just a tiny little club in a neighborhood of Palermo, Palermo's like the place where everybody goes. You know, tourists go there. It's like a lot of clubs, a lot of nightlife, but people live there.
Is that like a district of Buenos Aires?
Yeah, it's just a neighborhood.
Yeah.
All these places
called Palermo. Okay.
Palermo.
Yeah.
And
I was going to ask you the geography of that. Yeah, like of the layouts of the teams.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, you know, this is a area where, you know, a lot of tourists, a lot of nightclubs, a lot of restaurants, a lot of hanging out. But people live there, and there's a couple clubs in Palermo.
Right.
And this tiny little club, Edelson, is in the middle of Palermo, in the middle of all this action. And the kids go there and they learn how to play soccer, and girls go there, and girls and boys, they teach them how to play. And
There's a budding women's pro league in Argentina too?
It's slow. It's catching up.
So Brazil is ahead in terms
Brazil's way ahead. Yeah. Not much funding has gone towards the women's team. It's getting better, but it's not what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So Eros is just a tiny club. They have no stadium. They have a indoor soccer league that they're a part of, but good players come out of there. And these kids go to school in the area. They go play there after school. They go play there on the weekends. And if you're good, you'll get they'll give word to other clubs. Mm-hmm. Say, we got a kid here that's good, and they'll recommend them to a bigger club so they can go kind of like
cash cow. So the team can
no, they don't sell them. It's just
really
at that point they're not part of. Eros is not a professional
club. Oh, Eros. Okay,
they're right. Just there to develop kids, teach them. But if they see a kid that's really good, they'll give a phone call to one of the bigger clubs and be like, hey, we got this kid here, why don't you bring him in so he can grow.
Yeah, I think this is a good time to kind of talk about the dynamic here. I'm coming in. I am the so folks for you know those who are listening. I'm the American fan. I couldn't even tell you who won the MLS last year, but I can tell you who won the Premier League. It's one of those things because I think it's more exposed. Even though I don't know the names, the household names, I always call Fred to say, hey, who should I be watching in this game? I know the household names like Messi and Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo and Mbappe. And, I know Pep Guardiola because I watched a documentary on him. But that's the extent of it. So that's kind of what I am I'm the Michael Bluth of this conversation in the sense that I'm going to try to be learning. For those Arrested Development fans who understand that reference, I'm the straight man here trying to figure out what's going on, and hopefully probably provide some comic relief along the way.
So that makes me
Job or Tobias, right? Probably Tobias, I'll take most likely.
No, should I paint myself blue?
Yeah, yeah. That's the dynamic here. So when you say let's practicalize it for the American fan, all of whom have heard of Lionel Messi. When Messi was coming up, was he part of the Big Five clubs like in their programs? And was that his? Did he get to Barcelona by way of one of these teams?
All right, so
just to give us a general point of reference.
As a point of reference, the Big Five clubs are all in Buenos Aires.
Okay.
Racing and Independiente are actually in Avellaneda, which is a little bit south of Buenos Aires, but. It's in the province of Buenos Aires, and it's right outside the city. But for all purposes, they're all five of those clubs are Buenos Aires. There's also a sixth club. Some people say it's Vélez Sarsfield. They're also in Buenos Aires. Now, Messi was born in Rosario in Santa Fe, which is a province outside of Buenos Aires. It's a different province. And there's two big clubs there. They're huge clubs. And one is Newell's Old Boys and Rosario Central. Messi, as a kid, came up in Newell's Old Boys.
Okay.
Angel Di Maria, who just retired from the national team, he was Rosario Central. Right. But these clubs are not... They're really successful. They've had their own success in their own time. They're huge. They have a huge following in those cities. But they're not considered the Big Five, you know. But they have huge stadiums and they have a huge following.
Yeah, they're not considered the Big Five in the sense that they've been up and down between leagues, or are they constant Premier League? What is the first league?
First division.
It's called First Division?
Yeah, Primera A. It's like A division. Well, for our purposes, we just call it First Division.
Okay, yeah. So are they staples in the First Division?
Every team has...
How many teams are in the First Division?
At the moment, it
varies.
Argentine soccer has changed a lot.
Yeah.
I believe there's around 28, 30 teams, which is a lot. It's fat. It's a lot of teams to have in one league. But the federation is always messing around and tinkering with how to what's the best way to go ahead with a league season. Every team in Argentine soccer has been relegated, even the big ones, except for Boca Juniors. They've never been relegated. Even River Plate was relegated, 10 years ago, I want to say, maybe a little longer, but that, That was a, that was sent shockwaves through the world, you know, like everybody in the world.
The English equivalent would be like Liverpool being demoted or
Man City. Yeah, it's like Liverpool was relegated. And they were relegated and there were tears and it was unbelievable. Because the thing with Argentine soccer, it's not like you finish last and you get relegated. In Argentine soccer, they take an average of the last 3 years, last three seasons. And if you're in the bottom, whatever it was, two or three, average-wise, of those three seasons, you get relegated. And that was to protect the big teams. Mm-hmm. But River Plate was so bad at that time that they got relegated too. And then Independiente got relegated, I think, 1 or 2 years after that. So the big teams were relegated.
Mm, okay.
But they came back the next season, and they've been and they're actually they're at this point they're probably been the most successful club in Argentina for the past 5, 6, 7 years.
So even the River Plates and the Boca Juniors and the Newell's Old Boys,
yeah,
they when they have an otherworldly talent come into their midst like Di Maria, like Messi, there's no way that they can be able to keep a talent like that based on their budget or you know like because even though they are the bigger teams. They pale in comparison to the Barcelonas and in terms of scale, right?
The thing is that over the past now, it's been like 20 years now, the talent, young talent has been leaving Argentina younger and younger and younger. It used to be, you know, you'd put your time in the first division in Argentina, and then in your early 20s maybe, you'd get sold off to Europe. Now it's like they're coming to get them 16 years old, even younger.
Like this Guanchali kid. What's his name? The star that the young kid that plays on I think Man U.
Well, you're talking about Garnacho. But he wasn't born in Argentina.
Oh, he wasn't.
He was born in Spain.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He has an Argentine mother. He doesn't have an Argentine accent.
Oh, okay.
But he decided to play for Argentina.
So who's the next export? Like who was the latest export of note that we might be hearing from? Do you know that answer?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, Boca Juniors had this kid, Valentin Barco. They just sold him to Man City last season, so he's in England. No, to Brighton. He's at Brighton.
Okay.
But he's a young kid. So he's at Brighton. He's in the Premier League.
Oh.
I think he may have been loaned out, but it's like now it's younger and younger and younger. The kids are leaving, so they don't get a chance to. They'll play maybe half a season in the first division in Argentina, and they're gone. If they show any promise, they're gone. And sometimes they're not even make the first division. Just the scouting departments of the European teams are so extensive that they're coming down to South America because they get to get these players for little money, and then see how they develop. And,
right.
and instead of paying 20, 30, 40, 50 million for a player that's already established, you get a kid 16, 17, and you pay maybe 10 mil. And then you can develop him, and if he's no good, you get rid of him. And you loan him out, or you end up selling him. But the loss is not that great. So it's low risk, high reward.
Yeah. Trades don't happen on the international scale like they do here in the States, right? Like we love the trading deadlines here of all our respective leagues. That's not really the case.
No, in world football, it's more of a transfer window, it's called. Mm-hmm. So there's two windows, one in summer, one in January.
Has there ever been a trade? Like,
yeah, there's play- now yeah. lately there's been players involved.
Okay.
But it's historically been for money. You sell a player for money.
Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, Christian Bale got sold for big... I'm sorry.
Batman?
Batman got sold.
You mean Gareth Bale?
Gareth Bale, thank you. Gareth Bale got sold. And it was for huge money, I remember. I believe one of the Spanish teams, right?
Yeah, he went from Tottenham to Real Madrid for like 100 mil.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. And how much does a player get, do you know, from that?
It's interesting. I was listening to Sergio Agüero, who played for Man City a couple years ago. You know, he's probably the most important player in the history of the club. He was sold from Independiente to Atletico Madrid. I forget for how many millions. This was... long time ago. This is like 15, maybe more years ago. And he said that the player is supposed to get 15% of the transfer fee. I don't know if that's worldwide. I don't know if that's an Argentina thing. I don't know if that's a European thing. I'm not sure who gets that or how prevalent it is in other leagues. But he said he was supposed to get 15%. He also said that he didn't ask Independiente for that money. He just let them have it because they needed it, right? A lot of these Argentinian teams, they need the money. And that's why they sell these players. And that's how they made their money, is selling young players. These clubs are not owned by private companies. They're not owned by people. They have socios, which people put their money in and are part of the club. So they're fan
like owned. The Packers.
Yeah.
Publicly owned. Like
Packers.
Kinda?
Yeah. So they're publicly owned, and they, you know, every year a socio puts up his money, and that's how they make the money. Obviously they also make the money through advertising and other things, but they don't have like a Saudi backed company coming in and buying up, or else somebody would have bought Boca Juniors and made bank on it.
Yeah, or the Red Sox owners. Right.
Or like the Red Sox owners that own Liverpool. They're not for sale, these clubs. And it's a good thing, but it's also, it limits the amount of money that they can generate.
Didn't the Yankee ownership buy into Arsenal too, or something like that? Wasn't there some sort of affiliation? Or is that, maybe they agreed to...
I think there was an affiliation with Man City at some point. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I know NYCFC has the same colors as Man City. Yeah. That sky blue, powder blue, whatever that is. All right, so just let's back to the Argentina, so we can make that segue into the first episode. Just kind of give a... on the national team, because again, that's if anyone in the United States knows Argentina, it's the national team, right? Are there any players who have on the national team who have spent their entire career playing in Argentina that, we know the household names, Messi, Di Maria, Aguero, played in Europe. But like, what about, are there any names that have been full-time, whole career Argentinian?
Not anymore. No. If you're good, you're gone.
You're gone.
If you're not gone by the time you're... If you're not gone as a teenager, and if you're not gone by your early 20s at the latest, you're probably not going to be gone.
Yeah.
Or you're going to a lesser league. Maybe you're going to Uruguay or Chile to make some money, because you're not going to make it. You're gone, because that's where the money is. Even MLS, the Mexican league, pays more money than Argentina. Even Brazil now. Brazil has had a big injection of cash, and they're paying a lot better too. So if you're gonna make a career out of soccer as a young player, and you want to make money, you gotta go. And these players don't exist anymore that spend their lifetime at one club like they used to.
Yeah.
The last really, really good player that spent his whole career in Argentina, except he did go to Columbus at the end of his career.
The mighty Columbus.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ohio.
It was Barros Esqueloto. He played his whole career in Boca, in Gimnasia, in La Plata, which is a city in Argentina. And then he went to Boca. He won everything with Boca Juniors. And he just never made that jump. And
how long ago are we talking?
Early aughts. So he...
And so post-dated Beckham, kind of?
About when Beckham was playing.
Yeah.
And he just... I always wonder how come he never made that jump. No, Tevez made the jump, and Martin Palermo made the jump, and all these other Boca Juniors players made the jump. And he never did. And he was one of their key players. He's like one, two, three top most important players of that era, when they were winning the Copa Libertadores Cups, and they were the best team in South America. They even beat European, when the South American champions and the European champions played each other, Boca Juniors won one of those championships. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been Real Madrid. But anyway, he never made the jump until late in his career. He came to MLS late in his career, and he won the MVP with Columbus Crew, and he won the title with Columbus Crew. But after that, most of these guys, they stay, they're gone. They're gone as teenagers, and if they show any promise at all, they are gone.
Do they have academies in Argentina?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they'll pull these kids out of school and enroll them in their academy. That'll be their school, their soccer, everything?
So, in the video, you'll see that I interviewed two ball boys from Chacarita, and one kid came from...
Facundo.
Yeah, he came from La Rioja, which is... in the middle of nowhere. It's up in the northwest of Argentina. And somehow he found out about a tryout. He went to tryout for Chacarita, and he made it. And so there's 9 divisions. And
wow.
I was under the impression that the divisions are separated by age. Like, 9th division, you'll be 6 years old. 8th division, you'll be 7. But it's not like that. These 9 divisions, you can be anywhere from 12 to 18. So Facundo is 16, and he was in, what did he say? Did he say it was Septima or Cuarta? I forget. He said, well, that's not in the video because I cut it out, but he told me that he was in La Septima, I believe, or Sexta. So it means the 6th division. So it means he has 5 divisions to go, and he's 16. So and by the time you're 18, you want to have a good idea if you're going to make it pro. And he's a striker, and he had 1 goal this season so far. But, you know, that means that he has kids in his division, in divisions ahead of him, Division 5, Division 4, Division 3. There's no Division 2. The Division 2 is called La Reserva, which is the reserves. So that means if you're on reserves, you're pretty much a pro, probably sign your first contract.
Yeah.
And if you're needed, they'll call you up. And then there's a first division. That's the pro team. He's 6th division, so he has to make strides to get there.
Yeah.
The other kid, Dario, he's 16 as well, but he's a defender and he was short. He wasn't that tall. And he's like, I gotta grow. He's like, hopefully if I can grow, I can debut by the time I'm 18. They both were saying that they wanted to debut by the time they were 18. And he was 4th. He's in 4th division, so he's closer. So he must have
some talent. Yeah, some
he skill. Must have yeah. something going on. Yeah. But he's probably gonna have to grow because he was pretty small.
And he was how old?
He was 16. Yeah. And he's from Buenos Aires. He's from the province of Buenos Aires. He tried out, and he's been at the club since he's 10. So he's been there 6 years, and so he's stuck around. And I'm assuming he has a shot, and I hope he makes it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about episode 1 of What Is This Place? You cover 2 teams in this one, Atlanta and Chacarita.
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 Yeah.
Okay. Now, what I immediately kind of stuck out to me was that these 2 fields used to literally be, right next to each other.
Right.
Yeah. And then Atlanta was kicked out.
No.
Or Chacarita was kicked out. Sorry. Yeah. Why? Like, what do you mean? When they say kicked out, what does that mean? Like,
okay. So, to go way back.
Was it too violent? Was it too.
No. It was just a property thing. What happened was, to go way back, Atlanta, they're known as Los Bohemios, the Bohemians, because they were, when they were first founded.
Yeah.
Over 100 years ago, they were traveling. They didn't have a stadium. They would travel from neighborhood to neighborhood to play. They would play in other people's stadiums.
Yeah, they play now. They play in Kolbowski Stadium. Is that a big Argentine surname, Kolbowski? Kabalowski?
Kolbowski. He was their president when. Well, the thing with Atlanta is that they have. I don't know if this guy was Jewish, but they have a big Jewish following.
Okay.
So if you see the names. On the around the stadium, there's a bunch of names, and it looks like they could be Jewish.
Okay,
but they have a big Jewish following. Villa Crespo, where the neighborhood they're in, has a Jewish population as well.
Okay,
so Atlanta's first were the Bohemians. They didn't have a home field until they settled in Villa Crespo. Chacarita. The cemetery in Chacarita is the most famous, biggest cemetery in Buenos Aires, and they're named after that. I think they played near there. That's why they're called Chacarita Juniors. That's why they're called the Funebreros. They're called the Undertakers. That's their nickname. Mm-hmm. But they settled in Villa Crespo as well, and they stadiums were like right next to each other. I mean,
literally.
Yeah. Literally, they were touching. So there would be games going on, and the both teams would be playing, and that's where their rivalry started. That's why these 2 teams don't like each other.
Why is it pronounced Darby, not Derby?
That's an English thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's Derby and everywhere else. Yeah,
I don't know. I say Darby just because that's what they. That's yeah. You sound. I think you sound silly saying Derby. Or yeah. you could just say rivalry.
Yeah, that's probably better.
I mean, in Argentina, it's a clásico.
Clásico. Right. So they refer to their derbies as
clásicos.
Clásico.
Right. Yeah. And like Boca Junior and River Plate is a super clásico. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the 1940s, Chacarita got kicked out. They got basically got evicted. The property was needed for something else. And they kicked them out. They kicked them out of the stadium. And that's when Chacarita went to San Martin. San Martin is just outside the city limits. But that's why Chacarita also has a big following, because they have, and that guy Carlos, the newspaper guy, said, like, he's been around forever. And he said, he's like, during game days, they're in the streets, you can see Chacarita fans, Atlanta fans everywhere. And you know, that's where this rivalry started.
Right, because they had roots in that territory. So, yeah, they're more spread out.
Right,
yeah.
So then they go to San Martin. It's a more spread out area. It's in the province of Buenos Aires. So Chacarita has a huge fan base.
Okay,
and they're pretty big.
And now, how far away between the two stadiums now? Miles? Kilometers, I guess.
Yeah. It's not that far. It's probably like a 20-minute drive without traffic.
Okay.
You can take a bus, but it's not that far. Their offices are in too far from. Villa Crespo, that's like a 10-minute walk. That's where I met the president of the club and the coach of the club when I started inquiring about filming at Chacarita. So they got evicted in the 40s, and they went to San Martin and built a stadium in San Martin, Villa Maipú. San Martin's a neighborhood. Villa Maipú is like the district. And Atlanta stayed there, and they built their stadium in the 60s. And Kolbowski, who started the building of the stadium, bought the old property that Chacarita Stadium was on, and that's where they built their stadium.
Right. Okay. So we're going to talk about the stadiums, because I saw some, you know, just the fan experience, some fascinating things in there that I want to talk about. But you brought up Carlos, so let's talk about it. In the video, you refer to him as a member for decades, right?
Yeah.
When you say member, what does that mean? He actually was a member of the team at one point, or a historian?
No, he's a socio. So he puts money up to be a member of the club.
Okay, so he's a public owner. He has shares in the club.
So basically, it's like a season ticket.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
And you get you pay your yearly fee or monthly, whatever it is, and you know you're allowed into the stadium, and you get to vote, because you get to vote for president of the club.
Oh, okay.
And but he also had something to do with the club. He was involved with the club as far as he was like on a board, something like that. Mm-hmm. When they introduced me to him, because when I talked to the guy, Sciano, who's building the fire.
Yeah, he's the one that owned the newspaper stand.
No. When I'm talking Carlos. To the younger guy, uh-huh. he's like, you need to go talk to the guy in the newspaper stand. He's been in Atlanta for
the younger guy that was cooking on the soda and the, the Coca-Cola and...
Right, he told me, he's like, you need to go talk to Carlos because he's an institution here. He's like everybody knows him. He's been part of the club for decades, and he knows a lot about the club, and you know he knows the history, and that's why I interviewed him.
Right, and then a guy that's been there, a historian kind of, and also involved with the team. Now, you brought up that young man. Let's talk about. The Fernet, what is it? Fernet and Coke?
Fernet.
Fernet. I couldn't read my own handwriting. Sorry. Fernet and Coke. I got, is it known by another name? Like maybe type 2 diabetes if they're drinking this much soda? Explain the taste of it to folks. Fernet and Coca-Cola.
It's Fernet Branca. It's it almost tastes like a liqueur. Like it's sweet and it's an acquired taste. It's not easy to drink. But that's why they mix it with the Coke, and it's really good. I mean,
is it like a syrup almost, or
kind of a little bit? But it's not for everybody, and it probably takes a little bit getting used to. But it's everybody drinks it now down there, and what they do is they cut open they'll get a bottle of Coke, a liter, or Pepsi, and they cut it open. They cut the plastic bottle open, and they pour. The Fernet in there, and so they drink out of the cut open plastic bottles of Coke with Fernet. Mm. And the idea is that it's 70% Fernet, 30% Coke. No, hold on. Is it the other way around?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, because it's strong. It's 80%. It's 80 proof. 80. It's as strong as vodka.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't think.
Right. Because
it's not that harsh. But no, it's 70% Coke, 30% Fernet. That's...
And so by the time you drink that 1 liter bottle down, you're pretty much feeling all right?
Yeah, but it's shared. You know, they share it. Or they get these huge glasses and mugs, and they'll, there's actually Fernet mugs.
Right.
And it'll have little lines of where to put the Fernet, where to put the Coke. But it's all shared. It's like drinking mate. They share it.
Okay. Know? Yeah. All right. So Atlanta and Chacarita, as I try to roll my R's, they shared territory. Chacarita moves over. Now, in the video, you hear Chacaritans talk about Atlanta and the Russians. What is that slight? Is that a slight? And what's the...
All right.
Like, that they're all Russians, what does that mean?
So, it's a touchy subject here because, like I said, Atlanta has a big Jewish following, right?
Okay.
So, there's a lot of songs that are saying that would be considered anti-Semitic.
Here?
Right. What the guy said in the audio, he says there's a neighborhood full of Russians. And he went on to say, they're not...
Off camera? Like, you just didn't make the video?
They're not viewed...
This guy would have been canceled.
They're not viewed very well here, right?
Okay.
And
what did he mean by Russians? What was the...
The implication is not just Russians, it's
Jewish.
It takes a place of Jewish, right?
Got it.
That same week when I was there, I actually went to film... I was going to go film All Boys, which the next episode, it's going to be Club Atletico All Boys. That's a club, a second division club in one of the neighborhoods. And they were playing Atlanta. And I was supposed to go there and film them. No. What happened 2 weeks before I got there is they were playing Atlanta. And they carried out a coffin with the Atlanta flag. And there was an Israeli flag on the coffin, and what they ended up burning the coffin with the Atlanta flag. They didn't burn the Israeli flag, but they did burn the Atlanta flag on the coffin. And there was a Palestinian flag, so this whole thing. I don't know if it's that pro-Palestinian anti-Jew. I don't know. They call it, the way they describe it is like, it's not a big deal. It's called folklore. They say folklore. It's just what we do. We bust balls, we find a way to get under the skin of other fans, and you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to hear when you're coming from another country and you start hearing stuff like that. You know, and there's also some
Our sensitivities are different.
Yeah, it's a different, and yeah, it's yeah. And there's also some homophobics that could be considered homophobic chants. You know, but anyway, so yeah, he's like, they're Russians from the Visha Krepo neighborhood. That's kind of like. He's like, yeah, they're Jews from Visha Krepo.
Right, okay.
Not so many words.
Okay. Yeah, now, like, that seems to be... I remember you telling me about a song that one of the Argentine nationals of the soccer team, put out about France.
Right. Yeah. Enzo Fernandez video that came out.
What's his name?
Enzo Fernandez.
Angel Fernandez?
Enzo.
Enzo Fernandez.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that came out, and...
Is it a song, or is it just him talking shit?
That's a song, and the song came out after the World Cup win, and
so after they beat France, he
did.
He took salt.
I mean, it was.
He took salt and it was like here, right here on the wound.
Yeah. It's weird because after the World Cup, nobody said anything, and that song. I heard that song played, and the fans sang it, and I think the national team sang it as well, and you know they're saying like. Basically, what the song says was that a lot of these French players, they say they're French, but you know, what they're saying is like these guys that France or these old French colonies are the players from there, or their parents came to France, and now they've become this great national team because of these African descendant players.
Yeah.
And to them, you know, that song is said in jest, and I can see how it could be offensive. But, you know, the way the Argentine Federation defended it, I was like, well, listen, I mean, we're not the ones that colonized Africa and brought players over. You know, it's like, you guys are the colonizers. We're just saying what we see.
Yeah.
So it's a little complicated. I know he had to go back to his club and face French, black yeah. French players. Like, so it's like...
Holy short-sighted. Jesus.
But yeah. There's also, I mean, yeah. other than that part of the song, there's also the whole part of the song where there's like, there's a trans thing going with Mbappe and a whole other thing. So I don't know.
Oh boy.
It's a complicated thing. And, okay. You know, yeah. I would suggest that they don't sing that song anymore.
Just yeah. That's probably a smart thing to do. Now, I wasn't going to cover this, but I have to because it's such a point of annoyance for me. I'm looking here, as of 2022, the population of Argentina, 46.23.
Right.
Give me 1 second here. Good. Quiet is always good for a podcast.
Quiet by time. The way, just to touch on that again, when I was talking to Carlos, the newspaper guy,
yeah,
the week before I had gone to Chacarita, and then I went to Atlanta the week after. And I told Carlos, I was like, you know, the Chacarita fans were hammering the Atlanta fans. And, you know, they were saying things about being Jewish and all that. And he said, he's like, yeah. And him as an Atlanta fan, he's Italian. He's like,
yeah, I remember
he's
saying.
He's
yeah,
like, came from Italy. He's like, yeah. He's like, I get it. He's like, we do have, you know, we're a mixed group. We have Italians. We have Jewish people in this neighborhood. We have. Spanish.
It's an eclectic community.
It's a mixed neighborhood, it's a mixed fan base. But he was like, but you know, this is just part of the culture. It's part of the folklore of Argentine soccer. It's what we do. It's not mean spirited.
Okay.
It's just in the vein of you know, maybe being nasty during a game, but not going overboard and meaning harm on somebody, that right. kind of thing.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that's how he looked at it. That's how he explained it.
Why does it not have...
Doesn't make it right or wrong, you know, but I'm just...
Right. So, Argentina, 46 million as of 2022. France, 68 million if you're rounding up as of 2022.
Right.
Again, United States has a population of 330 million. Why do we suck so bad? If you had to boil it down... Like, why are we regressing when these smaller populated nations, right. with a smaller talent pool, one would think,
yeah,
is it ingrained in their DNA, like basketball is to us, or football is to us, American football?
I think,
like,
it's a lot of reasons. One, it's not in, right, it's not ingrained, right? When I was growing up, you know, soccer was always my sport, but we didn't play soccer in the streets. We played basketball and football and baseball. So it's not like these kids in Argentina and Brazil.
They're born with a soccer ball at their feet, basically.
I mean, there's video I'm going to show in the San Lorenzo and the All Boys footage. These kids didn't have a ball, and they were kicking a bottle, like a water bottle.
So barefoot on a, I'm envisioning barefoot on a dirt patch with a bottle instead of a soccer ball?
Well, no. Oh. It was just, they were there, they were waiting to go into the game. You know, there was pre-gaming, everybody's pre-game. These were kids that were there, and they were just bored, and they just started kicking a plastic water bottle, and they were actually,
keeping it up in the air.
Yeah, keeping it up, kicking, and there was a goalie, and there was a guy kicking, Jesus. And they were kicking the ball. So it's like in their blood. They just want to start dribbling and kicking, and it's ingrained. And it's just, they're born, they get a soccer ball, they grow up, they're playing from when they're little.
Right.
Now, what I see here in the States now, I am seeing a lot more kids playing on their own. There's a lot more of these synthetic fields that are being built, and you see a lot of kids playing now. The technique that I see kids now didn't exist 30 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, the technique has gotten exponentially better from what I see these kids have. But it's going to take time. It's going to take time for that to grow.
Well, would it be, like, I always thought this, maybe in terms of, by the way, like it should be noted that an Argentine national is now the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. Argentine will be, right?
Right.
Pochettino, yeah. Is that his name?
Pochettino, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully he, you know, I think what has to happen is a systemic kind of overhaul of everything, right?
Right.
But I was thinking that instead of maybe putting a team, you know, like the 1980 Olympic hockey team wasn't an all-star team as much as it was Herb, I can't remember his last name. The coach that Kurt Russell played.
The 1980 hockey team?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about.
Herb something or other.
Yeah.
Put together a team, right, of college kids. But yeah, he took star players and that didn't make the team for the sake of a better
right.
continuity, better camaraderie. Does the United States has to build a team like that maybe plays competitively in the MLS as Team USA? Like, would that work? Like, this team plays together over the course of time as opposed to making it an all-star team every now and then, right? Like, instead of pulling Pulisic and Robinson and Adams from their right. club teams every now and then, building a team and just letting them play. Like, you know,
well, there's two ways you can go with this. So Italy, when they've had their great teams, have always had a base around Juventus. Juventus, when they were good,
mm-hmm.
they pulled a lot of the Juventus players from that team to the national team, and that's when they won a lot of tournaments, right? Same thing with, I think...
It's curling inward. Yeah, there you go.
Same thing with Spain when they had their golden era in the late aughts, early teens.
And it seems like they're back again. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they were based, I think the way of playing was based on the Barcelona style.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of Barcelona players and then they had some Real Madrid players. So you can take your national team based off of a great club team, right? If you're lucky enough to have that, because Italians will mostly play in Italy, Spain, Spanish players mostly stay in Spain for the most part. Now, if you look at like Argentina, just won the last World Cup, they don't have the best players position per position, but they figured out a way how to play like a great team.
Argentina. Yeah.
This version of Argentina.
Like
they are a great, I don't know what Scaloni did. He came out of nowhere. I don't know if he's a genius. I don't know. He figured something out, but he got these guys playing like a team that believes in what
they bought in. It seems like they can have success beyond Messi too now. Like, right?
Right.
Yeah. Because like Messi was so, the team was so Messi-centric in the World Cup, but in the last Copa America, not really.
Mm-hmm.
And they still won and won pretty easily. You know, like,
right.
Like were they really even challenged, you know, like maybe early, you know?
I mean, they lost to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They
I'm talking about in the Copa America, like this last one, it's the latest iteration.
Right, but I mean, what Scaloni did was, when they lost to Saudi Arabia, he wasn't afraid to make changes. He benched Lautaro Martinez, who was one of the best strikers in the world. He put in Julian Alvarez, who was not, you know, he was known, but nobody thought he was going to do what he did in the World Cup. He started McAllister. I thought McAllister was a good player. I didn't think he was going to be this good. I mean, this guy is one of the best midfielders in the world now. And he wasn't afraid to bench people. And he benched Paredes, who was a stalwart in that midfield. I thought that midfield was unchangeable. But he took out Paredes and he put in Enzo Fernandez. Also, Emi Martinez. I mean, a goalie. Franco Armani was the guy. He was going to be the guy. He got hurt. Emi Martinez comes in. Blows the doors off everybody. Nobody saw this kid coming. He came out of nowhere. I mean, he was bouncing around Europe, and he took his chance, and he took it for real. And you can't. It's his position.
Yeah.
He will be there for the next 5-6 years. So now with the U.S., it's like you're going to call Pulisic. You're going to call Tyler Adams. You're going to call the star players. You have to. You can't not call them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like MLS has a dominant team where you have mostly American players because most of the MLS teams are full of foreigners.
Right, or a retirement home for...
Right, and it's not like the Columbus Crew has like a base defense of American defenders where I'm just going to take that defense and put it in a national team.
Right, right, right.
It's not
right,
like that.
Right.
So I don't think it would work. I think you have to get, you have to take the best players that are, most of them are in Europe, and mold them into a cohesive unit, which hasn't happened.
And that's the point of frustration, I think, because we, every indicator should be that we're excelling, but when those players come together, it's dog shit. It's just like, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, Greg Berhalter's, because of him, you know, because they hired the wrong guy, and hopefully Pochettino can, you right. know, can milk them for everything they're worth. But, you know, what's, do you feel confident in, like, they just lost to Canada, you know, like, so they're even going back farther than when they did in the World Cup, where they literally looked outmatched.
I think, if, you know, Pochettino can do
and, it. And, oh, and I mean, sorry, Copa America, where they looked like they didn't belong on the field.
I mean, they ain't getting yeah. the group, which is
yeah. I mean, plus you can't have that red card. I mean, that was just a bonehead play by a smart guy, you know. All right. Anyway, I didn't want to get bogged down.
I think yeah. if Pochettino does what he did at Tottenham, the U.S. will have a good World Cup.
Okay.
If things break right,
let's knock on wood. Yeah.
It's about getting that you because they're good players and you know if you could get those players that base, Pulisic, Yunus Musa. Gio Reyna, I think Tyler Adams, obviously they got to stay healthy. Tyler Adams is never healthy. Gio Reyna's always hurt. But if you can get that unit, the midfield, defensive base, and you know, if you get that spine together and working together well.
And if Reyna ever realizes his potential, yeah.
There's players there that can beat good teams. On a good day, they can beat a great team.
Yeah.
And it's just, you have, something has
if
to
we click. Only if we play in England every time, we seem to play our best against England. It's crazy, but you know, then the Dutch come in and beat the shit out of us.
I think what they need is a system, and a system they could buy into yeah. and they can believe
and
in.
And that's why I hope Poch does is that I hope he builds it all from the ground up. You know what I mean? Like, because even the under 23 team for the Olympics, they got the shit beat out of them by France. You know, it's
right.
It's yeah. It's.
I mean, that's yeah. gonna happen.
I know. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about. We talked about kind of the geography of it. Let's talk about. The one where they stole English flags.
Right.
Okay. Kind of for the American layman, talk about the Falklands and how visceral that was and why that's so relevant and still carries to today. And then explain the flag stealing and how that factored into Chacarita.
Chacarita,
yeah. Yeah, good.
So in Argentina, there are Islas Malvinas, mm-hmm. not the Falkland Islands. Argentina still claims them as theirs. And just a little history, in the late 70s...
Iron Woman, the Iron Lady.
The late 70s, Argentina had a military dictatorship. They were kind of...
The junta. Yeah.
And they were kind of losing a grip on their power. And they invaded Islas Malvinas, which belonged to England. They did it, I believe, to kind of like drum up support mm-hmm. for them.
When you're popular, you're going to start a war. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they invaded in 1982. It went terribly. It was not even close. You know, England sent their warships. They had much better technology, weapons, better training. Argentina hadn't been in a war in I don't know how long. They were always at war with themselves. There was a lot of guerrilla warfare going on in Argentina.
The guerrilla warfare to overthrow the junta.
Right, they were just going at each other, right. Military.
So it was almost civil war going, almost.
Right, in the streets. Right. So it was military against the guerrilla warfare in a city, you know. So the war didn't last long, and Argentina got its ass kicked. But, you know, there's still, to this day, there's still a lot of feelings.
Animus, it feels that way, yeah.
Right. Up to the next... episode's called is All Boys. Their stadium is called Islas Malvinas Stadium.
Right.
And they renamed it in 82.
What is it called?
Islas Malvinas.
So and that means
Malvinas,
what?
Malvinas Islands.
Malvinas Islands. The Falkland Islands.
Falkland Islands.
Right. Okay.
So.
And why is it so central to Chacarita? Are they the closest to that proximity?
What do you mean?
Like, why it seems like Chacarita, why do they embrace that history? The Falklands, are they geographically closest to the Falklands? No? Okay.
No, Falkland Islands is way off.
Okay. So, like, why are they, is that a point of pride throughout the whole nation?
No. It's a point of pride throughout the whole nation. There's a couple.
Right.
The All Boys Stadium is called Islas Malvinas. I think there's another huge stadium called Islas Malvinas, I think in I don't know if it's in Mendoza or La Plata. Anyway, but they all identify with La Malvinas. So it's a big deal in Argentina.
And so why when the stealing of the flags?
So what happened in 86? In 86, Argentina plays England. And
In Mexico.
Yeah. Quarterfinals. It was the famous Hand of God game. Mm-hmm. Famous greatest goal of all time game with Maradona scoring both goals. And in the stands, there was fights between English and Argentine fans.
And this is when the Falklands was still very raw.
And the players took it personally, and they're like, "We need to win this game as at least a little bit of some kind of revenge to get something back." And the players took it really personally, Maradona most of all. And in the stands, there was fights. There was fights going on.
Who were the star players for the English team back then? We know Maradona, obviously, but
Gary Lineker.
Okay.
He scored.
He was the guy.
He won the Golden Boot. He scored six goals.
Oh, in the World Cup. All right.
And a goalie, obviously. I forgot his name.
That's all right. Who cares about goalies?
But he's bitter to this day that Maradona scored
the Hand of God.
He just won't let that go.
Yeah.
I mean, Maradona's really short compared to him, and he got the better of him. But so the fights go on in the stands, and Chacarita sent some fans, and they started battling with the English fans, and Chacarita
stole the flags.
Stole some Union Jacks.
And those flags are still on display to this day, on the stadium?
No. There might be. I know that there was one in a bar that was making its rounds, but it eventually got stolen, and nobody knows where it is. But there's pictures of the English flags all over the state. I don't know what happened to them. I don't know if they're still around, but I know that they did steal the flags, and they were like their trophies, and they were proud of it. You know, so it was kind of like their little kind of revenge, I guess.
So Messi was kind of in Maradona's. First of all, you have two boys that were born here in the States. If they were born in Argentina, you legally have to name them Lionel or Diego or be face jail, right? That's wrong?
Yeah, maybe. There's probably a lot more Lionels now than there used to be. There's definitely a lot of Diegos.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed every other player on the national team is named Diego. Has Messi, he was always kind of in Maradona's shadow until obviously Qatar or Qatar. I don't know, why they chose a country where the name is still in question.
I'd go with Qatar.
Now are they co?
Yeah,
has Messi eclipsed the?
For a lot of people, he has eclipsed them. I mean, if you go watch old videos of Maradona, he was just on another level. He was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's so similar. Like what they, I mean, they're not similarly built in the sense. Well, they are in the sense that they both have a very low center of gravity. Is that like are teams looking for builds like that now? Because like you have two sub 5'7" superstars.
Well, the center of gravity is everything.
Yeah, I would think, yeah. But then you look at a guy like Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, who's very tall. And and then that guy, who's the guy that you and I like, the gypsy guy, Zlatan?
Ibra.
Yeah, he's another tall guy, you know?
He's really tall.
Yeah, he's really tall. So, like, it doesn't really seem to matter. But, I mean, just the skill level, if you watch...
Well, that's what's so great about...
Slalom goal, that as they call it, for Messi, I can watch that... A jillion times.
That's what's the great thing about soccer is that you don't have to be 6'6" and 250 pounds to be.
Yeah.
You can be tiny and still have a successful career, which.
Yeah, I mean, even the Spanish, Xavi and. And the other one, Iniesta. They were tiny guys too.
Yeah. But yeah, no.
And I'm saying tiny guys as I'm standing here 5'9" tall.
Well,
yeah, I'm not like an offensive lineman myself.
Maradona was stockier. Yeah. He was like a thicker dude.
Yeah, he had tree trunks for legs. I mean,
And he had to be because when he was coming up, the defenders were just chopping him down.
Cleats up.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. Right. The hammerings he took during his heyday in the 80s.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like built the same way. They got same size, both lefty. But yeah, I mean, Messi broke out of that Maradona shell that he was in, that people.
And they're such different personalities too, right?
Yeah.
All right. So the one thing that kind of struck me from watching the video, I think in both fields,
that I got the sense just from the camera work that being at those stadiums is like the equivalent of watching a soccer game in a prison yard because you have the fences with the barbed wires. Right. Did anyone ever explain why there are barbed wires? Because I would think the barbed wires wouldn't have to have been installed unless there was purpose behind it. Like, were there huge incidents of rushing the field, of violence on the field? Do they not want the fans to run on the field after a victory to ruin the field because of the cost effect? Like, why the fences with the barbed wires? And it will get to the banners, which blows my mind.
Right.
But let's talk about that.
So the fences are not around the whole stadium.
Okay.
Like, the more expensive seats, you won't see a fence or a barbed wire.
All right. And how on top of the field are the fans in Atlanta and Chacarita?
They're both right there. Okay. They're both right there.
So a streaking incident would be very easy to pull off if you wanted to in one of these stadiums.
If right. you get it over, if yeah. you're not in front of a fence,
yeah.
If you're not behind a fence, but some stadiums have moats. Like the other day,
is it like a class system, like a cast, like they put the fence, they put the hooligans behind the fence. And is there hooliganism? I guess that's another good question.
So the hooligans are called Barra Bravas.
What?
Barra Bravas.
Okay. Right? In translation, is there?
It's kind of like...
Hooligans? Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it'd be hooligans, but it's kind of like fans that are, you know, they're wild or something like that, you know?
Wild fans.
So the way the stadiums are set up is behind the goals, it's called La Popular, the popular seats. And there's no seats. It's all standing room. So if you notice, it's all cement stairs. Where people stand.
Yeah, yeah. With railings or no?
And there's railings there, and that's in case there's a goal or an avalanche, people get caught there, and you know, it's just everybody doesn't get rushed to
the front. Yeah, right. So one guy falls.
But a lot of kids do, they just stand on top of those railings and they hold the flags, and that's where they're jumping
yeah.
on now.
Right.
So the Popular is where the Barra Bravas hang out. That's where they go.
If you're hearing those ticking, that's Raleigh the dog walking around on the hardwood.
Yeah, he's looking for attention.
Yeah, he wants attention. Hi, buddy. Okay, go ahead. Listen.
And then on the sides of the field, sometimes there won't be any stands at all, but the stands on the side is where the more expensive seats are, the press boxes are, and what we would call a suite here, but it's in Chacarita, it's not like giant stadium where you have like
chicken fingers,
air conditioning, beers,
spread.
Fridges, TVs everywhere.
Yeah, right.
It reminded me of like, all right, Raleigh, that's enough with the toy. It reminded me of
he just looks at it, pissed off. All
right,
yeah.
The suites reminded me of like a penalty box in hockey. Okay. That's what.
Really?
It, yeah. But you know, they probably pay a little more for that. You know, there's a window there, and you're next to the concession stand.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what's the fare in the stadium? Like here in hot dogs and Cracker Jacks, what are they selling down there?
That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
You're gonna see, in Chacarita, there's no concessions.
Nothing.
Like. One of the hallways, I'll get to that because it's pretty wild how they're not taking advantage of the whole stadium and selling beer. And
Fernet.
Yeah. Well, Atlanta, they did sell Fernet, but it was sold illegally. The fans have a lot of influence on these clubs, and if the team is not playing well, they will show up to practice. And some
to air their grievances.
They'll show up on the field.
It's a Festivus kind of thing. Yeah.
They'll air their grievances. And they'll tell them, he's like, you guys need to start playing. You guys need to start putting more heart into this. And they'll threaten the players. And the players listen, you know, and they're like, okay, you know, they're kind of like blown. They're just kind of go through the motions and listen to them. There's been instances where the players kind of like fought back and they've gotten their ass beat. You know,
physically beaten by fans?
Yeah.
Really?
Although,
so if they have the audacity to stand up, they get the shit beat
And the
out
thing
of.
Is, like, how do these fans get in, right? I mean, somebody from the stadium let them in, right?
Right.
And they let them in onto the field. And they go and they squeeze them. They squeeze the players. And they're like, you know, you guys need to do this. You guys need to show more heart. You guys are representing this club, this shirt. And you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, they squeeze them. And,
Can you imagine like one of us saying that to like Aaron Rodgers, like, you know?
It's kind of like the Bleacher Creatures walking onto Yankee Stadium and walking up to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, right.
You see that NY and you see the pinstripes, you better start representing it the way you're supposed to.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's like Aaron Judge would probably squeeze your throat, you know? Like, what the fuck is this? But that's the way it is. And the thing is...
Yeah, because there's really no American equivalent to what... goes on.
The thing is this, is that the Barra Bravas, so these hooligans, let's say, they're into a lot of illicit stuff too. They're into drugs.
Yeah.
They sell drugs. They have their hands in everything. So when I actually went to Chacarita, I was like, I want to go to La Popular. And the guy from the club looked at me. He's like, okay, but we need to go talk to somebody.
You need permission almost.
So
yeah.
We went to the entrance. They took me outside the stadium, my cousin and I, and they called for the guy, one of the guys. And I got some of this on camera, but I had to keep the camera down because I didn't want, you know, I didn't want to put a camera in his face and be like, what the hell is going on? And the guy from the club said, all right, these two guys are documentarians. They want to come and film. We want to film with you guys behind the stadium. And behind the goals is where all the action is. That's where all the music is. All the fans are the most hyped up. And by the way, Chacarita, when I was there, didn't have flares or flags or a band because all that was banned by the Federation for a couple months because one of their fans was killed during a game. Exiting a game, I think he was stabbed to death. So they banned all that fun stuff for a couple months. So when I went there, they didn't have that. So it's kind of like the ambience was a little
Shut off.
So if you notice, there's no band, there's no big flags, there's no flares. Some of the stuff that Chacarita gave me, the video department gave me to fill out the footage. Now, the guy from Chacarita, he called a couple guys and he said, take them around and show them La Popular. So he gave me instructions. He's like, all right, we're going to walk down this hallway. You're going to walk down into the down into the stands where La Popular is. You can take some video from that corner, and then you're going to go underneath. Don't take any videos of the people in the middle. Just walk through. You could take videos going towards the stadium, but not back at the guys. And then go to the other corner, video that way, that from that angle, and then we're going to go. And that's it. And I had to be escorted with the camera.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too because, expand on that. Why did you not, like, who were the people that he didn't want filmed? Like, were these the kingpins?
Part of the crew. They don't want to be on camera. Same thing with Atlanta. When I went there, they were like, don't film some guy's faces.
Because maybe, yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah. I was kind of like, what's the big deal? I was like, I'm not here to like expose you, but I guess they don't want cameras in their faces.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So.
Yeah, I'm always wary of that too because I don't want to end up on social media. I hate being on social media. So,
right,
yeah.
That could be part of it. Yeah. And so when I went there.
Especially, I don't have a criminal past. Like, you know, if any of these guys, maybe that's why, yeah, so.
Well, I had an escort. One guy was escorting us in the front. One guy was escorting in the back. And we went down this hallway, and it was dark. I mean, it's like underneath the stand, but it's dark. And there's murals painted, but there's no light. And there's concession stands that are closed. And there's cobwebs. And I'm like, what? Like, why aren't they selling something out of here? You know, aren't they selling Coke? And there's some guys selling stuff, like walking through the crowd, but... there is nothing like, you know, we go to Giant Stadium and they're selling cookies and hot dogs and
everywhere. Beer. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't go
5 feet
without
there's sports books in a place now. Yeah, right.
It's incredible. Here they're not selling anything.
Yeah.
And that was in Chacarita. They're renovating it, but it's pretty run down.
Yeah. Somebody screams, gringo, welcome to Chacarita or whatever. They're speaking to you. Oh, Yankee, right. Yeah.
Because I met him outside and they started calling me Yankee right away.
Is that like a staple? Like as soon as they meet an American, we're Yankees?
Since I was born in Argentina, I was in the Air Force. I served in the military in Argentina and I was known as a Yankee.
Okay.
So they call me Shanky.
Shanky.
Yeah, and right away, that's what they call me.
Yeah. Let's talk about the obstructed view by these banners in right. I would hope that these are the cheapest seats in the place.
Well, yeah, they're the cheapest seats for sure.
Now, are they within the stadium, or are they for folks just to walk up and watch the game?
Yeah, you can
through
buy,
them.
You can buy. What do you mean?
You said that there's the standing room areas with the handrails.
Yeah.
So do you have to buy? Do you have to
they're
have
not a handrails? They're more like railings.
Just railings to lean up and to prevent an avalanche of people.
Avalanche
right.
People, yeah.
Right. So do you have to have a ticket in order to access them, or is it just kind of a public walk up area?
No,
because so I would imagine that these banners. Well, if I bought a ticket behind one of those things, I'm going to be livid.
A lot.
Yeah.
Well, you're not, because you're going to know that's what to expect. Now, a lot of these fans that are there are already socio, so they're already they're
just used to it.
Well, no.
What's a socio?
Socios they pay to become a member of the club.
Oh, okay.
So they're members of the club,
right,
so they
right. Okay.
They just go and it's like a season ticket, and then you can buy a ticket. At the ticket window.
Yeah. As a mental health professional, socio means something different for me than just
socio
for you.
Socio is like a member.
Right.
So, I mean, you can sit at the top and you're not going to be obstructed by the views. Now, if you want to get closer, you just have to kind of peek your head through openings in the where the banners are, or you have to... Sometimes the kids will get underneath the banner. But yeah, these banners go up before the game and they're up there the whole game.
And what are the banners? Are they advertisements? Is that they're advertising?
No.
They're go team kind of banners.
Some of them are fans that have passed away. Some of them are the neighborhoods that the people come from. Maybe supporting a player or an old player that died. But it's usually...
It's kind of like the...
It's
the a wall of fame almost.
Yeah, they just put up these banners. It's to show support for the team, to show color.
And how much would a ticket be as compared to midfield? You know, what are the price discrepancies? Did you have any insight into that or not? You didn't really...
I do. On. I remember looking at the prices. I forget, though, off the top of my head. I have to do some little... I have to go back and look because I just...
Yeah.
I just got a bracelet and they let me in go wherever I wanted. Yeah. So I forget what the prices were. But not expensive.
Okay.
Tickets aren't expensive.
All right. So we kind of touched on the hooliganism. And obviously, you and I, for the folks who don't know, Fred and I have known each other since middle school. So we've been friends for a long time. And Fred knows this about me. Most of my education comes from movies. So Green Street Hooligans, very allergic to the journalist. Were you embraced, or was there distrust, a little both? Did they think that you were benevolent in terms of how, or were they worried that you were going to portray them as, you know, not in such a great light?
It varied. All boys in San Lorenzo, I had no issues. They just let me go wherever I wanted. The fans, the especially in La Popular, they had no problems. They, nobody said anything to me. At Chacarita, like I said, I had to,
yeah, to be very careful. Right.
Ask for permission to bring a camera. And I had to be escorted through. I mean, if I had bought a ticket and was just hanging out atop, I can just hang there, of course. But since I had a camera, they were distrustful. But, they were cool. They were like, all right, you can film. Just do what we tell you. And then we'll escort you out. And
right.
They did.
Right.
At Atlanta, I was able to... I walked in... and some of the guys kept coming up to me and they're like, what are you doing? What are you filming? And they're like, all right, don't film these guys' faces. But I'd always, every few minutes, somebody would come up to me. Most of the people were cool, but every 20 minutes, half hour, somebody would come up to me. Like, where are you filming from? Where is this going to be? And at the end of the day,
kind of looking at you sideways almost.
Yeah. They're like, kind of like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, after the game, one of the guys came up to me a couple times and I was leaving and he's like, you're lucky we didn't ask him for money. And
so he was kind of hinting
it's kind of like saying, we let you slide this time, but we could have asked you for money and we could have demanded money. And
yeah,
I was like, I'm not here. I'm just here just trying to capture the vibe. I'm not trying to like, do an in-depth exposure on what you guys are up to. I'm just, you know, to capture some, a little bit of history, a little bit of ambience, a little bit of what it's all about.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, they were there. Atlanta one was probably the most distrustful one that I saw.
Okay. Now, we know our Super Bowl here in the States, 50 million, maybe 75 million watch it. By comparison, the World Cup championship is watched by hundreds of millions. Like, it dwarfs it.
Billions.
Yeah, probably billions. Right, exactly. So based on that, the popularity of the sport and the passion around it, has it gone? Is it too much sometimes? Like, is it for someone, like you said, someone got stabbed leaving a game, right?
Right.
And that kind of level of passion, and you see that, like, again, the storming of Wembley in 2021, right? And the violence that ensued around there. And then the you know, for those of us here who watch Welcome to Wrexham, we see that one episode where they capture the hooliganism there. People right. literally getting the shit beat out of them.
I mean, you see that here, too. It's not like people beat the shit out of each other in the stands at football games. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
When I was in L.A., the guy died in a parking lot. They beat the shit out of a guy. At the Dodgers stadium, right?
Yeah. I remember that.
I mean, it happens here, too. You know, it's not like
Yeah, but it seems what happened at Dodger Stadium seems to be more of a anomaly here than right. it is in other places. Is it too much sometimes? Like you see, and what struck me about that documentary in England, the storming of Wembley, where they interviewed some of the stormers, and they were contrite but weren't ready to say, I did something wrong there. Like they said, I wanted to right. see, they justified it, but like, I wanted to see the game, and I would have done anything to see the game. Should you have stormed the building? Probably not, but I would do it again, almost, right? So that mentality...
It's almost like a Jan 6 mentality.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, right. So, like, they... You know, because we're never the villains of our own story, right? We're always right. the heroes, right? So, like, when you were there in Argentina observing these four clubs...
Right.
Did you see... Like, is it too much? Is it just right? You know, right. is it, like, you know, the Goldilocks and the Three Bears? Like what is... What needs to kind of... change the culture that, you know, it can be welcoming to the outsider, and, you know, like...
Here's the thing. I think it is welcoming to the outsider. Not that, there were, at Chacarita, there were Americans there I met. Mm-hmm. And they were... No, I never felt threatened at all in any of the stadiums right. I went to at right. all. I mean, at San Lorenzo, which is surrounded by Vichas are like the really poor neighborhoods. Stadiums surrounded by these poor... Bichas. It's kind of like favelas in Brazil.
Yeah, right.
So, and the San Lorenzo guys told me, he's like, oh, don't go that far, don't go into there. You know, they told me where to be careful not to go into. But at no time did I feel in danger at right. any of the stadiums. At Chacarita, my cousin, at the end of the game, my cousin's like, yeah, it's getting dark, you know, we need to get going. And I was like, I just want to get a couple more shots. He's like, we should.
Now, if an Atalanta fan wanders into a Chacarita,
that's going to be a problem.
Well, right.
Here's the thing.
And that's what struck me, like that documentary again. A young lady was in Italian gear, and she had to literally climb up a pole to save, like, because she feared for her safety. Right. And they were throwing, you see beer bottles and everything being chucked at her. Wow. Like, that's the kind of, yeah, it was really bad. Well, I mean, it was poorly run, like, it poorly mismanaged from the beginning, but that's a whole other story.
Well, here's the thing.
They let beer bottles going in. People were drinking glass beer bottles. So, anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to allow to drink in
the stadium. People were hammered, yeah. And that's what happened. Like, the game was about to start, and they realized, holy shit, there's nowhere to go. The pubs right. are filled. Everything's filled. So that's why they stormed the stadium, because they wanted to see. So
in Argentine soccer, as for the past eight years or so, no visitor fans are allowed to go to the stadium.
Which field was that?
All stadiums.
So Atalanta fans cannot go to Chacarita. Chacarita can't go to...
Atlanta.
Okay.
No visiting fans can go to opposing.
That's
stadiums.
Baffling.
So that is.
Huh.
It takes a lot away from the vibe of the stadium. It used to be, there's a section that is cordoned off for visiting fans, and that gives an amazing ambience to the game. Right. You got fans going off on each other, singing against each other. Back and forth between the fans. And that is for me, that's like everything. That's what it's all about.
Right.
But for that last 8 years, because of fan violence, because these fans were getting together in the streets, going at it, fighting, there'd be some deaths. The government shut it all down and said only home fans can go to your stadiums, no visiting fans. And they're trying to do away with it. So, you know, a big thing is getting on buses and traveling to another stadium, even traveling to another city and go support your team. That's part of the whole part of being a fan. It's part of the culture. And that's been taken away for the past 8 years because of the violence. I mean, the violence was just getting out of control. And the government said, that's it. No more visiting fans. And so if you notice in all the stadiums, it's all home fans. And there's still a good... Raleigh's drinking water. there's still a good... it's still cool, and it's got a great ambience, and there's, the music is pumping, and the
it seemed like it's a blast. Cool as well.
It's great, but having visiting fans there would just bring it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, well, the scene that jumps out in terms of having fans there, like the goalie that was cuddling with the ball.
So in that scene, that side of the stadium would have been the visiting fans.
Right,
that's where the visiting fans would have been. So the Ferrell fans would have been back there. Right? And that goalie probably wouldn't have heard it. But yeah, when that goalie got heckled, he could hear it clearly. I was right there. I was right behind the goal. They allowed me to go with the camera
behind the goal. Right. And did the opposing teams, like during the derby, whatever, when Atlanta, if Atlanta traveled to...
It's Atlanta.
Oh, it's just Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay.
The city.
Atlanta traveled to Chacarita. Do they have a police escort in and out? Like, is it... Because their safety might be in danger too, no? Or is there a passage given because it's a game? You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll have some kind of escort.
Yeah,
they'll get there in a bus.
And the bus probably gets pelted with things. Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah,
that's all part of the why they stopped.
Yeah,
they stopped allowing visiting fans, unfortunately, which is it's really sad. Yeah. But they're talking about bringing back visiting fans, so hopefully that'll happen, and hopefully they'll keep the violence down if that happens.
Atlanta or Chacarita, are they in position for promotion? Are they where are they right now on the table?
Nah, neither of them are.
All right.
I just know that Chacarita is not near the playoff spot, so it looks like they're going to be spending another season in Division 2. And Atlanta, they're also in 12th place in the B Division. So
yeah, so they got a ways to go. But how many games in the year so far? Into the year are they?
I mean, they're already 31 games in.
Oh, so
they're starting to get towards the playoffs.
Yeah, okay.
So Atlanta has a chance.
Oh yeah, I guess it's different, right? Hemisphere, different seasons, right?
They're four points back of the playoff spot. So I mean, they have a chance.
So they're going into summer right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or going into spring, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Who's on episode 2 of What Is This Place? Who are we, what team, what club are we meeting?
So the next episode is going to be Club Atletico All Boys.
Okay.
It's like All Boys.
Okay.
They
get their own episode?
They get their own episode. Now the stadium, their stadium is called Islas Malvinas. They're in a neighborhood called Floresta in the western part of Buenos Aires.
And how far away from Atlanta and Chacarita?
It's...
How far, like how long to get from one side of Buenos Aires to the other?
It's depending on traffic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of traffic. It takes a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Everybody rides buses, so it'll take a minute.
Okay.
And it's not exactly close, but it's in the western part.
Yeah.
Villa Crespo's like in the middle of Buenos Aires. Chacarita's in the north part of Buenos Aires, just outside the northern part. And All Boys is in the western part of Buenos Aires. Now, their stadium is weird. They have a 20,000-person stadium. And their Popular, which are cheap seats, is actually on the side of the stadium, which is I've never seen before. And I think it's the only stadium like that in Argentina.
So the diehards get to see the field pretty prominently.
And then across the other way is where the expensive seats are. Now, All Boys is probably the most like neighborhood club that I visited. Like they're part of the neighborhood. The stadium's right in the middle of the neighborhood. Same thing with Chacarita and Atlanta, but they just feel the most part of the neighborhood. Like they're really entrenched in the fabric of that neighborhood. And it's a cool little club.
All right, we're looking forward to it. Right. So that's going to be a wrap on episode one. So what we will do is follow episode two, where we meet the old boys.
Old boys, not old boys.
All boys. A-L-L?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like, hey, old boy. Hey, old chap. Yeah.
So there's Newell's old boys in Rosario.
Oh.
And in Buenos Aires, just all boys.
Just all boys. All right. Well, we'll meet the all boys next week, and then we will follow that up with what is this place? Episode 2, : one guy who knows. Well, I'm not going to read all that, but yeah, it's a working title. But until next time, I'm Al Shirtum. That is
Federico Ferro.
And we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
What is this place?